Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today, my friends, we're going to go right to the mailbag, and I've got a question here that came to me. It says, Mr. Walmsley, if you had an opportunity to decide to start a 401k as a young person or to go out and get into rental real estate, which would you do? And boy, I tell you, that is a very, very easy question for me because I made that decision. But I think we need to go into some of the reasoning and theory behind the pros and the cons and the benefits. The 401k, which almost everybody's been told you need to get into. In fact, they actually tried to pass some laws a couple of years ago where you had to get into it. Your boss could make it mandatory you get into it unless you just decided you were going to check out of it. So they'd put you in it and you had to actually extract yourself to get out of it. Okay, whatever. Why? Because they thought that, you know, people need a way to save money for the future, and the 401k has some wonderful benefits to it. The wonderful benefits are, number one, they take the money away from you before you can even think. I think if there's anything about the 401k that makes sense about it, it's the fact they take it out of your paycheck before you ever see it. So you don't really feel like you're saving because you never see the money. And if you never see the money, you don't ever think you ever made it. And even though you did make it and you never see it, you end up seeing it in an account somewhere, which in your mind almost feels like free money. In fact, for most people that really don't understand what's going on, it is free money to them in their mind. Then they tell you that, okay, the boss or the company is going to match whatever you put in up to a certain amount, whatever that limit is. And I don't know all the different limits, and I don't think it's relevant to me to know it because I don't believe in them, as you'll see as we go through this example. So then you just do this for the rest of your life. You pay in and 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 pay in, along with the concept that, you know, if you keep paying in, you never really feel it. So the big picture that you need to wrap your arms around here is what's really supposed to happen in your mind is that if I continue to pay in my entire life, someday at the end, when I get ready to retire, there is going to be a large sum of money there, a large chunk of value there that I'm going to be able to draw from. Now, when I go to draw from it, it's going to be taxable. And so I am going to pay taxes. I didn't pay taxes on the money in the front end. That was part of the allure, is that you won't pay taxes. But unfortunately, it's a lie. It's a misrepresentation because you are paying taxes. You're paying Social Security and Medicare taxes on the money on the front end. When you pull it back out, you end up paying the income taxes. Now, you didn't pay the income taxes on the way in, but you did pay the Social Security and Medicare taxes. So if you think about this just for a second, this is a side problem I'm just going to throw out there. What if you got paid money, they took taxes out, and then you never got the money? Now, I want you to think about that for a second. You got paid money, you never got it. And even though you never got it, they took taxes out. Bizarre concept that people would let themselves fall into that kind of a situation. But they do, because they know no better. So the end goal here is to end up with a big chunk of money. That's what you're hoping. Now with this big chunk of money, they're saying, well, you're going to take this money out when you're in your lowest tax bracket. Do you know that that very concept is admitting failure of the 401k itself? My retirement plan that I have, the one I live by, I have become wealthier every year since I retired at 35 years of age. Every year I make more money because I buy more real estate. I buy more, make more money, and then the following year I buy more, make more money, and the following year, and on and on and on, ad nausea. But with the 401k, they're saying that, you know, you are making more and more and more money in your job, and now all of a sudden you're not going to have any personal income, and you start taking this money out, and it's going to be at a lower tax bracket. Well, that in and of itself is just one of two things. One, it's a lie, because really your lowest tax bracket is when you're young. You shouldn't be doing this when you're young because you have a low tax bracket. You get the money out cheap. And number two, if it is really low at the end, that means that you don't have enough in your 401k to take it out to live like you're used to living. I don't want to retire at whatever it is you retire at, 65, 70 years of age, and now is really the average retirement now. It's gone way up because people can't figure out how to get there. I don't want to retire at whatever it is, 50, 60, 70, 80, whatever it is you like to retire, and actually live on less money than I had when I was working. I don't want to retire on $30,000 a year or $20,000 a year. You know, you have $1 million in your account, and your financial planner says you can live on 4% of it. That's the plan. We'll take 4% out each year, and that way we won't kill the account. 4% of $1 million is only $40,000. I don't get it. I don't understand it. But I do understand the fact that people that don't know what they're doing are going to listen to the people they think do know what they're doing, right? So if you look at the rental property situation as opposed to this, I buy a rent house, and I hold that rent house for 30, 40 years, whatever, till I retire. I'm going to assume that that rent house is worth more than that 401k, or at least as much. So why is that? Well, when I was a kid, my dad bought a three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage for $100,000. I'm sorry, my bad, for $10,000. And by the time I left to go away to college, that house was worth over $100,000. When I bought my first rental house back in 1987, I believe, I bought it for $25,000. It was a three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage house that I bought. It was built for $50,000. I bought it for $25,000. And it's worth $250,000 now. Tenfold. Both cases, about tenfold. So you would assume that if you're buying this rental house, and let's say it's a $300,000 rental house, median price is $350,000 nowadays, buy a $300,000 rent house, that 30 years from now, 40 years from now, whenever you decide to retire, first, number one, the mortgage will be paid off, and you will own it free and clear. But number two, whatever you paid for it today, which might be $200,000, we might buy a house for as a rental property, it might be worth $400,000, $500,000, $700,000. There's people that own little teeny three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage houses in California that bought them for $80,000. They're now worth $800,000 out there. This stuff happens. This is called inflation. This is called appreciation. If you like what's happening and you own some of it, you're calling it appreciation. If you don't like what's happening and you have some of it, don't own any of it, then you're calling it inflation. Because I was able to buy it for $25,000. You can't buy a house now for less than $200,000. And that's, you know, for a very small house. Just like I bought the $25,000 house. It was a very small little rent house. You can buy one for $250,000, $200,000. And so the concept is that after 30 years, we're going to end up in the same place. So whoever is trying to persuade you to go one way or the other, after you look at the long-term aspect of it, right? The long-term aspect of it is that there's probably going to be some money at the end of it somehow. So in both cases, what we're looking to do is to create a large chunk of money by retirement. So in the 401k, they start taking money out of our account, and we pay in. We pay in, and we pay in, and we pay in, and we pay in, and we pay in for 30 years. It's all money coming out of our pocket, right? On a rental property, it's completely different than that. And let me give you an example. If I were to tell you that I wanted you to go buy a house, I wanted you to get a mortgage on it, I wanted you to pay a payment every month for 30 years. At the end of 30 years, the thing would be paid off. The beauty of that investment would be this. Number one, the house would be worth 10 times more probably than what it was the day you bought. That's just typical 30 years, 20, 30 years, houses are go up that much. But so does the stock market. So in both cases, you're going to end up with some money, right? So in this one, you pay into the house every month, and the other one, you pay in the 401k every month. But that's not exactly what we're doing. What's different is we're going to put a tenant in this house. And that tenant is going to pay us not only the money to pay the mortgage. So we're not paying the mortgage, right? We're not paying the mortgage. The tenant is paying the mortgage. And then the tenant is so kind to not only pay our mortgage, but to give us anywhere from $200 to $500 a month extra cash flow that we can live off of, we can spend. Now think about this. For 30 years, you pay into the 401k. For 30 years, my house pays me. My rent house pays me. Just start with it. They both end up being worth something at the end. I can't right now tell you what the stock market will be 30 years from now. I can't tell you what a rent house will be worth 30 years from now. But I can tell you this, 30 years of receiving $200 to $500 a month for 30 years is a massive amount of money, especially if it's compounded. And what do I mean by that? Well, after I get paid X number of times, I'm going to have enough money to buy another house. And then I'll double that amount every month, and then another house, and another house, and another house. Which brings us to the next point. The money that we put into the 401k is limited. The number of rent houses is not. So if you're thinking, you know, I'm looking at my 401k, I pull the financial statement out every month, and I look at it, and I read it. Go see my financial planner once a year, once every 5 years, whatever it is. And you go, this isn't going there. We're not going to get there the way this is going, man. This isn't going to work. You come see me and I go, yeah, no problem. Let's add a few more houses. We'll just pick up a few more houses. And then the tenants will get you there. You just need more people paying you money. Now, the same thing with retirement. You can't retire on a 401k without depleting it. The goal of a 401k when you get to the end of it is to deplete it at either a very, very, very low rate, in which case you're hoping that inflation or appreciation will make your 401k amount, the money you end up with, grow at least a 4% rate so you can draw down a 4% rate. So on $1 million, like I said, that's $40,000. However, I've read articles lately where they're saying the 4% is too high nowadays, that it may need to be taken down to 3%. I'm not a financial planner. I don't cover the stock market, so I don't know if that's the case. I just know I was told 4% my whole life, and then I read this article that said, nah, 3% is the new 4%. Who knows? It could go back tomorrow and say 5% is the new. I don't know. The bottom line is, guys, for 30 years of your life, you're earning nothing. You're actually paying money out. Whereas you could have had a paycheck of $10,000 a month, you took home $9,500. Now, by the way, you don't take $9,500 because you're taking out Social Security, Medicare, and income taxes. Probably insurance. So you've got some smaller amount. Well, when I was working in corporate America, I made about $70,000 a year in what I call corporate America. I ran health clubs. I progressed from an instructor to a manager of a health club to a supervisor of 5 health clubs. That was my corporate America growth plan. Interestingly enough, when you make $70,000 a year, you only take home X, right? And by the time you pay Social Security, Medicare, and income taxes, I was only taking home like $3,500 bucks a month. Well, I found it was very easy to replace $3,500 a month with rental income. And hence, 2.5 years after I started buying rental houses, I had purchased enough of them to be able to replace my earned income with passive income. Now, why? Not because I made $70,000 a year, but because my take-home pay was $3,500 a month. That's all it was. So if we take that and go $3,500 a month times 12, I was really only taking home $42,000 a year. And you say, well, you should have a better job. Sure, we all should. So should the guy that made less than me. You know, so should the guys that made a little or a lot less than me, so should the guy that makes a couple few dollars more than me. Everybody would like to make more, but the making more doesn't solve the problem, because the more you make, the more you spend. And if it were that easy, everybody would retire in fairly good condition. But that's not what really happens. So you have to have a vehicle. And like I said, the strength of the 401k vehicle is the fact that you don't ever see the money. But the beauty of the rental property vehicle is that not only do you see the account growing as you see your mortgage being paid down by your tenant, you are going to own this house. You also see the appreciation of the house, the value of the house go up, right? Through appreciation. So you're seeing the appreciation like the 401k would do. You're seeing the mortgage reduction, which you don't have in the 401k. The only money and additional monies in the 401k is what you put in and whatever amount your boss will contribute. Well, you say, well, my boss contributes. How could I ever stop doing that? I say, well, my tenant, which is not my boss, pays my entire amount. Could you imagine if your boss had a 401k plan where they would put all the money in for you every month and then give you $200 or $300 or $400 or $500 extra a month, just extra money? Say, hey, I'm just going to pay a couple extra hundred because you're in the 401k plan. Well, you know that doesn't happen. You know that's never going to happen. But I'm telling you that happens with the rental property. So when we look at this situation, would you rather spend your money for 30 years to get to some retirement event? Or would you rather somebody else spent their money plus give you extra for 30 years to get to that very same retirement event? We'll take a short break. Be right back with the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Real estate investing doesn't have to be confusing. Lifestyles Unlimited teaches you how to build income with a clear plan and real-world strategy. Text radio to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. Today we're in the mailbag and someone's brought up the question of what is the difference benefit-wise between your 401k and owning a piece of rental income. Piece of rental property. And we've covered quite a bit so far, but now I'm going to go into the next one, which is leverage. The 401k doesn't allow you leverage. It doesn't allow you to do more if you want to do more. You pay in, and you pay in at an amount that is equal to some percentage of what you earn. So what does that mean? Well, unfortunately, that means that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Because if you have a very high personal income, you can sock away a very large amount into your 401k. So your savings account, and by the way, this is a savings account, not necessarily an investment, although you would hope that you're invested inside your 401k, something that would grow. Not going to argue that point, whether you do or you don't. I know that the investments in these things were so bad for so long that the government, the Fed, Congress actually passed a bill a year ago that said, you got to disclose what's going on in that 401k, how much, where it's being invested and what fees are being taken. I mean, there was a big ruffus about how bad 401k investments were, but we're not going to go into that because there's bad real estate investments too. What I'm rather look at is who are you as an individual? If you are an individual that really doesn't care and you're really just kind of do-de-do-do-de-do-do in life and get along, you know, go along to get along kind of guy, then the 401k works. Because no matter who you are and what you make, you can make money. But if you want to get ahead, and let's say you're not blessed with that big, giant paycheck job, you can only deposit an amount equal to some percentage of that paycheck. I should look it up and see what it is and be knowledgeable, but I don't really care because I don't do it. I don't tell other people or recommend other people do it, so I don't really care to know. But I know there is some limit. But there is no limit to how much real estate you can buy. You come in to me and say, well, I want to buy enough to make this amount. I go, okay, it's fine. Do you have enough money to do it right now? No. Okay, we'll start with what you got. We'll buy that. We'll make some more money. When we make some more money, we'll buy some more. And we'll just keep doing it until you get there. But in the 401k, you only get to contribute that which you can afford to contribute. Now, what does that do? Let me show you an example of what that does. There's a thing called average and another thing called median. Average means if you take all the people and add them together and divide by the number of people, that's what the average person has. Median is, hey, if you take all the people and put their numbers right next to each other, pick the one right in the middle, half the people have more, half the people have less. All right? The median. And so you look at the 401ks and you look at the highest peak years of owning a 401k, which is age 50s, 50 to 59. Say, well, why don't people have more money in their 60s? Because many people start drawing money down from the 401k. And I'm just looking at the actuarial science here in front of me. It's funny, in the 50s, you know, the median for a 401k is $253,000. The median in 60s is $180,000. The median in 70s is $92,000. And the median in 80s is $78,000. So what happens is you grow this thing all the way up until your 50s. And you start sucking it down in your 60s, is I guess what this actuarial science table is explaining to us here. But what I'm more interested in is to show you this. The average person, right, which means you take all the really, really successful high-paid people, and you take all the people all the way down to the average guy at the bottom of the ranks making pay that's putting money into a 401k, and I'm sure you're not putting money into a 401k if you're like a landscaper or something like that. You know, you've got to be working a real job, you know, with a real company to have a 401k. So there's a lot of other people that don't have any money in a 401k, but we'll just take the ones that are using the 401k. And what we'll see is that the average in the 50s is $635,000. Now think about that for a second. If that's average, that means those very, 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 very wealthy people are drawing that number up, way up, because of the amount they have averaged in with people who have nothing. So let's say it's average is $600,000. Let's say I have $1 million and there's 10 guys that have $100,000. You know, it takes 10 guys to balance me out, right? So the average is really an interesting number because it means almost nothing. But some dude out there has got $635,000, or the average is six. But there's no one guy that's average. You can't point to that guy and go, you're average. You have some amount. Your amount is not the average, okay? But on the other end, the median you can. And the median for people in their 50s is only $253,000. So if you take all the people out there, you can draw a line in the sand and go, that's the guy that's halfway between, and he has $253,000. But 50% of everybody else with a 401k has less than that. Wow. By the time they get to the peak of the 401k, which is their 50s. You know, you can buy one rent house. It's hilarious. I talked to a guy the other day. He came to me because I need to do something different. I said, why is that? He goes, I got like four houses and my own personal residence, which makes it five. And I bought them, you know, a long time ago. I took your class like 20 years ago, and now I've got them. I don't know what to do with them. So what are they worth now? He goes, well, I've got about $1,500,000 in equity in these houses. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, we got to get that out of there and buy an apartment or do something with it, right? Or we got to get something going. But here's the point. Just three rent houses and an own personal residence, he's got $1.5 million. 50% of Americans or less have only $253,000. I think just those two numbers alone are kind of interesting. Now, I don't know what the median, the average is on people who have rental properties. You may see the same interesting curve there. I can't say. But I will say I know that guy, you know, and I don't know this guy. So you got to ask yourself, who are you? Are you the $635,000 guy, or are you the $253,000 guy at 50 years old? Or are you one of the guys that's less than the median, less than the $250,000? And when you figure that out for yourself, you start thinking about this completely different. And also, here's something else that messes you up. When I take the money out in my rental income, it's tax deferred. So when I pull out $60,000, $70,000 with a tax deferred rental income, it's not like you pulling out $60,000 or $70,000 out of your 401k, because you have to pay the income taxes that you never paid. So you could be paying 15 to 33% in income taxes. So all told, it's a totally different thing. When you look at the situation carefully, right? When you look at the situation carefully, what you're going to find out is that it's almost impossible for you to keep up with the 401k compared to a rental house because of leverage. I can go buy another one. So if your median is the $253,000, that's what you got in your 401k, and my rental house is $253,000 of equity in it, I just go buy another one and another one and another one. I can take the money out of the $253,000 equity and go buy myself five more houses. You can't take the money out of your 401k and go double it, triple it, or quadruple it. That leveraging ability, the ability to leverage your income into the future and make yourself wealthier, is something that you just cannot do with a 401k. So there it is. The one beauty of the 401k is they take it out before you even know you had it. And yes, if you're going to own a rent house, you're going to have to save enough money for the down payment. We're going to show you how to do that and make it as small as possible. We have ways of using hard money lenders to make that possible, to put a very small amount down. You're going to have to know how to buy a house and renovate it and keep it nice. It's not you doing the work, it's somebody else, but you need to know how that is done. And you're going to know how to lease a house. And tenants are going to pay your rent. Now, if you don't know how to lease a house, tenancy could be a nightmare. If you don't know how to renovate something and you don't know who to hire to do it correctly, renovations could be a nightmare. These are things that would take even the strongest person and beat them up and make them not want to do this. I get that. And hence you roll back into the much less profitable 401k because you just don't even see it coming out. You don't have to think. You don't have to try. Hey, I get that, guys. Not thinking, not trying. That's one way to go through life. All right, let's move on. Somebody sent me an email. Says, Dell, why is it that my friend's rental property, the income that he makes from that is not taxable, and my 401k income is taxable when they told me it wasn't taxable when I first started putting the money in? Well, we have to kind of look at this in perspective. When they told you when you first started putting in, what they were saying was the money, the taxes were deferred. And really, in both cases, that's the real word we should be using, is tax deferred. Supposedly, you're really never supposed to get out of paying taxes. Like, you know, what are the two things in life you can't avoid? Death and taxes, right? You've all heard that saying. However, there's some twists and turns on that little statement that may surprise you, that it might not be all that true. There may be some ways to completely avoid taxes. So let's talk about it. In the 401k that you have, you've been putting money in there that as you put it in, they took out Social Security and Medicare already. So that part of your taxes is already paid, which I said in previous segments, I thought that was really bad. I earned a dollar. I didn't get the dollar, but I still paid 15% in taxes on the dollar. That's not a lot of fun, right? So now that you come to the end of it and you start pulling money out, now you owe income taxes and all that. And that's the part that they don't really explain to you, because they're saying to you, well, don't worry about the taxes because you're going to be in a lower tax bracket when you get to the end. Well, my point is, do you want to live at a lower standard of living than you did when you were working? And I've never met a person yet looked me in the face and said, Dell, that's what I want to do. I want to retire and reduce my standard of living. I'm going to sell my house, buy one one-third the size. I'm going to get rid of my nice car and get a beater car. I'm going to start eating beans and rice, and live like I'm broke. You know? Because that's what you have to do to go in a lower tax bracket. If you pull out the same amount of money that you're used to living on, you're going to be in the same tax bracket. Because now that money you're pulling out is your earned income, and it will be taxable, which is bizarre. The second thing about it that's bizarre is if you earn that income, it may reduce or it may force you to pay taxes on your Social Security. They never told you that one either. Social Security, you've already paid in on. It's your money. You paid you earned it, you paid the taxes on it, and then they took it away from you and put it in Social Security. Shouldn't you get your own money back? But you don't. If you're working and earning money while you pull Social Security out, you have to pay income taxes on it. It's a frightening concept. Frightening concept. All right? So let's turn that around and say, why is it that your friend's not paying income taxes? Because when you earn income on a rental property, you have something to cover that income as a deduction called depreciation. And so you can take depreciation on your property and use that depreciation, which is a phantom expense, and you can reduce your income from that property with it. Now, it gets even crazier than that. If you have enough real estate, if you use cost segregation and accelerated depreciation, you can write off almost double what you can write off on a normal type depreciation schedule. So now you're writing off a lot, and if you have a bunch of properties and you have a lot to write off, you actually have more to write off than what you're actually earning from those properties, and you now have something called excess depreciation. If you have excess depreciation, you can write that off against your earned income up to $25,000 a year. Now you say, well, Dell, that doesn't make any sense. Dell, I lost money, real money last year in the stock market, about $30,000-$40,000, and my CPA told me I could only write off $3,000. Yes. In everything but real estate, the maximum deduction you can take for losses per year is $3,000 per year. Is that bizarre? But in real estate, you can take up to $25,000. But what's bizarre is in the real estate, it could literally be fake losses. It is paper losses that you're taking. So now not only is the rental real estate income tax deferred, but some of your own personal income is tax deferred. That gets really complicated. Now that ability to do that phases out between the income of $100,000 and $150,000. By the time you make over $150,000 a year, they say you should not have the ability to take that excess loss. You're making too much money. You shouldn't get that benefit. That benefit should only be for poorer people. So if you make over $150,000 a year, you can't take the $25,000 of excess losses. But guess what? You still get to take all the losses against your rental property. So if I were to make $200,000 a year on my rental properties, I could have, no matter what my depreciation was, I could keep enough of it to cover all that income from my real estate. Now, if I made less than $100,000 a year, I could take another $25,000 off against my earned income. Now, here's where it really gets crazy. Let's make it even more complicated. If I am a real estate professional, there is no limitation. So if I own a large apartment complex, and let's say I'm writing off $300,000 a year in depreciation, and I'm only making net income off of that apartment complex $100,000 a year, I now have $200,000 of excess depreciation that I could use against my earned income. So you guys, what happens when you sell the property? Well, generally, you would recuperate all of this excess losses that you've been taking, and you would have to then at that time pay the taxes. But here's the deal. If you don't want to do that, you don't have to. You can do something called a 1031 tax-free exchange, and you can roll all of that potential tax burden into your next property and continue to carry it and not pay it. Now, literally, you could continue to defer that tax loss until you die. And when you die, it all goes away. Completely. Your family doesn't even have to pay it. And there it is. It's not just the money. Real estate provides you the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.